Osho Talk. Turning In, Number 8.
Daikaku said, "This school is an exceedingly deep and subtle teaching. Once you have heard it, it becomes an excellent cause for enlightenment for all time." An ancient said, "Those who hear this, even if they don't believe, have blessings greater than humans or gods. Those who study, even without attainment, eventually reach Buddhahood." A monk asked Daikaku, "How should I rest my mind? How should I use my mind?" Daikaku said, "The no mind has no attachment to appearances. Detachment from appearances is the character of reality. Among the four modes of conduct, walking, standing, sitting and lying, sitting is considered to be stable and tranquil. This means sitting straight and contemplating reality. Sitting straight means sitting cross-legged, as the Buddhas do. Contemplating reality means sitting meditation. Forming the symbol of absorption in the cosmos, body and mind unmoving, eyes half open, watching over the tip of the nose, you should see all compounded things as like dreams, illusions, bubbles, shadows. Don't get caught up in thought about them. When the eyes are open and you can see for a distance, your mind can be distracted by the profusion of objects. Yet if you close your eyes, you fall into a state of darkness and oblivion, and your mind is not clear. When your eyes are half open, your thoughts don't race. Mind and body are one thusness. When you examine clearly, the afflictions of birth and death cannot be approached. This is called fulfilling Buddhahood right where you are, the meaning of great capacity and great function."
Zen is fundamentally a device to discover yourself, and there have been many ways to find out you. You can approach from the north, or you can approach from the south. There are thousand doors, or perhaps no door. The question is how to convert your seeing energy from the outside attachment to the inner world. There is no object inside. There is only a watcher, an utter silence. Because for centuries and for many, many births, we are attached to objects of the outside world. It becomes difficult to enter into a space where there is nothing to hold upon, nothing to concentrate upon. One feels afraid. The very earth underneath the ground disappears. You are just hanging in pure space. This fear has prevented people from even thinking about meditation. To avoid it, they get engaged in every kind of thing. Just to look busy. If they sit silently, automatically the desire to explore the inner arises. A great world you are carrying, and you have not even knocked the doors of it. One Sunday morning, as the Bishop of New York Church entered in, he was very much puzzled, shocked. There was standing a man just like Jesus Christ. And to all practical persons, it is not possible. It seems to be a hippie. Jesus lived a hippie life. But how to decide? He asked the man, "What are you doing here?" The man said, "You are asking me. I should ask you what you are doing here. I am Jesus Christ." The bishop became trembling, said, "My God, I have never thought that this encounter will happen. Now how to say to this man whether he is hippie or really Jesus Christ? He looks like Jesus Christ." He immediately phoned Rome. Ask the Pope that this is the situation, I am caught. Nobody is here, the congregation, people have not come yet, it is early morning. And a young man looking like Jesus and also looking like a hippie says that he is Jesus Christ, the Lord we all have been worshipping. What should I do? Now the Pope started scratching his head. He has never been himself in such a difficult situation, the poor bishop. He said, "Do one thing, look busy. Who knows? Just look busy and inform the police that a hippie is pretending to be Jesus Christ. Let them decide." To avoid something, the simplest way is to get busy into something else. The whole problem for a person who wants to get into meditation is to know all the tricks the mind can play and prevent you. Dayakaku is discussing the device of meditation in a very pragmatic and particular detail. This school is an exceedingly deep and subtle teaching. Once you have heard it, it becomes an excellent cause for enlightenment for all time. The only condition is once you have heard it. How difficult it is to hear. Our minds are so engaged. There is no space left to hear anything else than the mediocre and trivial, unnecessary things of life. We are so much full of rubbish that there is not a place for a diamond. Once you have heard it, has two points to be remembered. Your openness to hear and the man you are hearing, whether he is just a scholar or he is a meditator. If you hear a scholar, even if you are open, the scholar cannot help you in any way to enter in yourself. Although he may be repeating the same words exactly as any enlightened one, but the words take a different color, a different sound, a different sound, a different aliveness when they come from the lips of the awakened one. When they come from deep meditative consciousness, they carry around them some fragrance, invisible, which is more important than the dictionary meaning of the word. Hearing can be of tremendous importance if the hearer is open and the heart is not a repetitive parrot-like, a scholar, a rabbi. A pandit. If he is saying what he knows himself without quoting the scriptures, if he is quoting himself, in this situation, when the hearer is ready and open, and the meditator is ready to shower himself, the miracle happens. Something invisible is sown in the heart of the hearer. Once you have heard it, it becomes an excellent cause for enlightenment for all time. An ancient said, those who hear this, even if they don't believe, have blessings greater than humans or gods. A very strange statement, but very beautiful and true. It does not matter whether you believe or not. Those who have asked you to believe in what they say are slave creators. It does not matter what I am saying to you, whether you believe it or not. What matters whether you hear it or not. If it is truth, just hearing is enough. Believing is not needed. Believing is needed only when it is not truth, but only a quotation from scriptures, from other Buddhas. When it is not coming from your own heart source, it does not have the freshness of the breeze passing through the pines. It does not have the freshness of the rose in the rain. It does not have the aliveness of a small child just born. It is stale. It is dead. And dead words are very dangerous. It is just like a dead corpse, looks exactly like the living man, only it does not breathe. There is no other difference. Those who have learned the strategy of stopping their breath, and there are many techniques for longer times, can play the game. I have told you about one Zen master told his disciples that today I am going to die. Don't prevent me. Enough is enough. I have been with you. I have tried my best. And now the time has come, I have to leave. But I don't want to leave in an unoriginal way. Find out some original way for me to die. His disciples looked at each other. Original way to die? People simply die. There was silence. Finally, one man said, just lie down on your bed and die. He said, that is too common, too mediocre. Almost 99.9% do that way. The bed is the most dangerous place in the world. He said, as far as I am concerned, the moment lights are off, I jump out of the bed. I lie down on the floor, that is safer. A place where 99.9% people have died, to sleep in that place, I wonder how can people manage to sleep. Don't ask me to be so unoriginal. Just suggest some way that is absolutely new. One man said, I have heard about a Buddha who died in a lotus posture sitting. But somebody else said that is not new. Few more have died the same way. It is unique, but not original, not ultra original. A man suggested, I have looked in the whole history of Zen, there has been only one monk who died standing. The old master said, my God, that means I cannot die even standing. Somebody has done that already. It will be a repetition. I think, listening to you all, have you ever heard anybody dying standing on his head? All looked at each other, they said, we have never heard anybody dying standing on his head. He said, that is perfectly original. So I am going to do it, look. He stood on his head and died. Now a man dead standing on his head, even alive, it is so difficult to stand on your head. The disciples were very much disturbed what to do now. It is suspicious whether he is really dead or pretending. They tried to listen to his heart. No sound. They tried whether he is breathing. No sign. But a certain ritual has to be performed before a great master is put on the funeral pyre, and they were afraid that it may be by mistake we may put a living master on the funeral pyre. The funeral pyre is ready in the grounds of the monastery. Somebody said, his sister is also a great master, just by the close by nunnery. And she is older than him. He is 90 and she is 93. And if anybody can do anything, that is the right person. Somebody ran away, called the sister. She came that he is so mischievous. From the very beginning, he has been doing mischievous things. Now one should die like a gentleman. He is making a mockery of death. She came and hit him, so he fell. And he started laughing. She said, you behave. Death is an important occasion. Just go to your bed and die silently. And I am going. I will not be coming back if somebody comes to call me. I have other things to do. When the older sister says in the East, an older person says, one has to follow. The poor master, laughing, put his body on the bed and tell to his disciples, okay, I close my eyes, take me to the funeral. They said, now we are even suspicious whether you will be dead on the bed either. He said, believe me, this time I am really going to die. But they waited, they took their time, just making excuses that they are making the funeral pyre and watching him whether he gives any sign. And he did give. He opened one of his eyes, just looked what is happening and said, be quick. I am dead. And he closed his eyes. Finally, they had to put him on the funeral pyre, not knowing exactly whether he is dead or not. An ancient said, those who hear this, even if they don't believe, have blessings greater than humans or gods. The blessing is in the hearing, not in the belief. The belief is pure poison. Never believe a thing. Experiment. Live it. Thoroughly. So that you can say on your own authority it is true. Never say, I believe in it, because that is the statement of an ignorant man. It is better to say, I don't know. That at least shows your honesty. That at least shows that you are not a hypocrite. That at least shows your innocence. But all over the world you will find people talking about things of which they know nothing. Everybody is talking about God. And there is not a single case as a fact that God has encountered any man. They are talking about the Son of God. Now Christianity is almost half of the world believing that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God. There is no sign of God anywhere. First, the God has to be proved. Then it has to be proved that he has a wife. Then it has to be proved that they don't follow birth control. There are so many practical things first to be decided. There is no God. Still, millions of people believe that Jesus is the Son of God. The whole humanity has believed in all kinds of things. And that has kept your intelligence very low. Even your very intelligent people are average 15% using their intelligence. 85% intelligence is sheer wastage. You will be happy to know that the University of Oregon had a survey about the commune, how much intelligence the commune people have and how much intelligence the average Oregonian have. They were surprised, shocked. They did not publish the survey until I have left and deported from America. Now the survey is published that the average Oregonian has only 7% intelligence. And the average commune member had 14% intelligence, double than any Oregonian. And the research is being done by the Oregonian. So you can think, people who have 7% intelligence cannot judge about people who have 14%. They must have tried to bring their intelligence as high as possible. My understanding is, it cannot be more than 3 or 4%. 7 is a make-believe. And the commune people must have near about 20, they have been reduced to 14. But still, it is so obvious that the lower intelligence destroys the higher intelligence. Stones are very much against the flowers. Belief is of the ignorant people who do not want to explore the truth themselves. But a man of sincerity never believes in anything, any god, any scripture, any religion. He searches. Dayakaku is giving you his method how to explore the inner world. Those who study even without attainment eventually reach Buddhahood. Those who hear a living word immediately reach to their very being. But even those who study the dead world even without attainment, but the desire, the longing, the seed somehow gets even through study. It may take a longer time, perhaps life's to become an attainment. But even those who study without attainment eventually reach Buddhahood. Zen's greatest contribution is that it raises everybody's dignity to the highest. Everybody is a Buddha. You may attain it, you may not attain it. It is your decision. But the Buddha will wait just behind you, just deep inside you. And it will wait from eternity to eternity. Any day, any moment, you can open your eyes and see it. You can go in and say, "Ha." A monk asks Dayakaku, "How should I rest my mind? How should I use my mind?" Dayakaku said, "The no mind has no attachment to appearances. Detachment from appearances is the character of reality. The mind is nothing but many attachments, many thoughts, many identities, and the no mind cuts through all these and makes a silent space in you. Through no mind you come to know the character of reality. Mind keeps you dreaming, imagining, fantasizing. It never allows you to see the reality as it is. You are always imposing your idea on the reality. And your mind is capable enough. If you give it power, it can create even unreal things. As if they are real. Where I used to live in my village, by the side of my house there was a small, very narrow street, going nowhere but to a Brahmin priest who was also a teacher. In the middle of it, just by the side of my house, used to be a huge neem tree. Neem tree is thought to be by Indian medicine a very purifying effect on the air, on the atmosphere. Its leaves are thought to treat many diseases, and just the wind passing through it gets purer. So every old house used to have neem trees around it. But there is only one danger. On neem trees, ghosts live. And this was very ancient tree. When we purchased that house, the only problem that it was for sale for many days, and nobody was ready to purchase because of this old neem tree. And the sign of ghost was clear. In India, if somebody is suffering or is possessed by a ghost, he is taken to a neem tree. Some mantras, some Vedic rituals are done, and a big nail is hammered into the tree with the idea that the ghost is now hammered with the tree, and he cannot leave the tree. And on this tree there were so many big nails who will purchase the house. I told my father, you don't be worried. You just purchase it. As far as ghosts are concerned, I will deal. He said, what you are saying? It is an ancient tree and everybody is prohibiting, don't purchase, even if it is given free, don't take it. But we had a need of a house. Finally I convinced him that don't be worried, we will cut the neem tree. And when we cut the neem tree and throw it into the river, the ghosts all will go with the neem tree. They are nailed, they are not free. He said, that's true, they are nailed. Because of that neem tree, it was such a joy for me that the Brahmin priest, who was also a teacher in the high school, He was my teacher also. He talked very much about bravery and this and that. And in the night when he will come house, because he used to go for private tuitions, he will run. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. And he will run because that was the dead end, his house. I asked him one day that you are such a brave man. I don't see you doing this Hare Rama, Hare Krishna anywhere else except near the neem tree. He said, that neem tree is dangerous. One of my fellow students used to go to his house in the night to study, and he was certainly more afraid. His teacher was afraid, his father was afraid. But that was the shortcut. Otherwise they have to go almost 1 mile round, then they will reach. So he used to bring a lamp. I told him, you are stupid. In darkness you may escape, but if you are having a lamp, you are declaring yourself. And the ghost cannot see in the darkness, but in the lamp. He said, you seem to be right. He asked the teacher. The teacher said, no, don't be worried. But he has a point in it. In darkness, if you see some ghosts, you can escape this way, that way. But if you are keeping a lamp, the ghost will directly go towards you. And he said, without a lamp, I cannot enter this street. So the teacher said, don't be worried. He said, you are asking about worried. I cannot go home now. I'm so afraid. I have made him so afraid about so many stories about the ghosts of the neem tree that it jumps over people. That it is not one ghost, it is almost a company, a whole regiment. That he forced the teacher that you please come with me at least to the main road. He said, I can do it one day, but not every day. I was sitting on the tree with an old kerosene oil drum. And the teacher came with great braveness to show his disciple that there is no hurry. And when I beat the drum and throw the drum on the teacher, so his head was covered and there was so much havoc, he fell down, the student fell down, the whole neighborhood gathered, what is the matter? I also came down to ask, what is the matter? The teacher looked at me suspiciously. And when I said, what is the matter, because I was just going to sleep, I heard this noise. But it has happened before also. it is better you should go the long way. This way is dangerous. Even the teacher was trembling, perspiring, and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Who knows? He has to go back also. The boy went home and the teacher said, what I am supposed to do now? I said, you have to go through the dangerous place. I cannot help. Anything is possible. It is not one ghost. If it was one ghost, I would have convinced him not to bother you. But there is almost a regiment. He said, then it is better I go the other way. I said, you go the other way. But never talk about your bravery and all things that you teach in the school. It was very difficult to find a wood cutter to cut the tree. Because my father wanted to remove it. It is unnecessary a trouble for all the neighbors. And who knows, it may be true. I brought an old Mohammedan who said, I don't believe in ghosts. He was very old Mohammedan. I frightened him as much as I could. I said, don't take this risk. You are old enough and it is almost a regiment. He said, don't be worried. The more I frightened him, and my whole process was so that he takes it as a challenge. Otherwise, nobody was ready. I had gone to many woodcutters. They said, that tree we cannot touch. This was my final device. That I started talking about ghosts, not about the tree, or cutting of the tree. He himself proposed that, if you want, I can cut that tree. I said, no, I will not say to you, you are old, and the ghosts are many, and you will be alone. Although I can help you as much as I can, but I am so small. He became more and more challenged. He took his axe and told me, come with me. I am going to cut that tree at the risk of my life. Everybody in the neighborhood prevented him, physically prevented him. Don't touch that tree. And I asked people, have anybody ever seen the ghost? Nobody has ever seen any ghost except that teacher. And that was not a ghost, it was a kerosene drum. And he was suspicious about me. Because here and there he said to people that I suspect ghosts cannot carry kerosene drums. But that man was so adamant, he cut the tree. There was no ghost or anything. But he became so much inside afraid that what he is doing out of challenge, one never knows. The day the tree was cut, he fell sick. I went to see him, he said, "You were right. Now I am alone in the house and those ghosts torture me." I said, "Which ghosts?" "Those ghosts that the neem tree was having, they have all come with me." I said, "Can you show me?" He said, "That is the trouble. If anybody else is here, they become completely disappear. And when I am alone, they torture me in such ways, you won't believe. Somebody is sitting on my chest, somebody is pulling my hairs. And the fear is such that I cannot even scream." That fellow died. And there was no ghost or anything. I have been up and down that neem tree 1,000 times in search of the ghost. I never found any. But the man created the phobia. Your mind is very creative. Once it creates something, it starts believing in its reality. And it is very difficult to know with the mind what is real and what is just your imagination. Only in a state of no mind, all mind-created realities disappear, all ghosts disappear. A pure, absolutely silent reality arises into your vision. Dayakaku is saying the no mind has no attachment to appearances, detachment from appearances is the character of reality. Among the four modes of conduct, walking, standing, sitting and lying, sitting is considered to be stable and tranquil. That is true, scientifically true. These are the four positions possible for the body to create a right background for the mind to become silent. If you are asleep, you are horizontal. In a horizontal state, meditation is very difficult because too much blood is rushing into your head. It will keep you awake. That's why the pillows are used all over the world, for the simple reason to keep the mind a little above than the body, So the blood flow is less. With less blood flow, you can sleep. Standing, you are going too far away from the gravitation. And you cannot go on standing for long times. You will get tired. From where the tiredness comes? It comes from the gravitation, which is pulling you down. And you are standing up. You are going against the gravitation. Those who have experimented with all postures of body have found the lotus posture, the way you have seen the Buddha sitting, is the most suitable. Because the spine is erect and the gravitation is the least. When the spine is erect and you are sitting, the power of gravitation is the least. You can leave your body at a tremendous rest. For the Westerner it is difficult, because for centuries, because of cold, people have not been sitting on the ground. Their bones, their body structure finds it difficult to learn to sit in a lotus posture. For a Westerner takes at least 6 months to be perfect. Now it is too much. In 6 months, the Western mind wants to go around the whole world. 6 months just to learn to sit silently. Are you mad or something? And what you will do by sitting in a lotus posture? Unnecessary torture. But it is not. Sitting in that posture, it is easier for the body to be at rest and yet not asleep. The body is at rest and then you can contemplate reality. Sitting straight means sitting cross-legged as the Buddhas do. Cross-legged helps to remain you in the same position. You cannot fall. You cannot doze off. In fact, it is so hurting. You cannot even think of dozing off. But being in a cross-legged lotus posture, scientifically, is perfect. You have a base, and because of cross-legged, you cannot fall this way or that way. Those cross-legged will prevent you. And you have to keep your spine erect. Less gravitation, and the body is at rest, it can remain in that posture for hours once you have learned the posture. In the East, at the time of Buddha, there was an ordinary posture. Everybody was sitting in it. It was nothing special to be learned. In a hot country, chairs were used only by the kings. Everybody, even the richest person, were sitting. And to sit cross-legged from the very childhood, your body takes that posture so easily, and it is so restful that you cannot conceive until you sit in that posture how much body feels rested, far more rested than in sleep. And this cross-legged posture is for a certain purpose, contemplating reality means sitting meditation, forming the symbol of absorption in the cosmos, body and mind unmoving, eyes half open. That has been a very controversial point amongst the meditators in the East. Some prefer eyes closed, because even if eyes are half open, the world, half of the world is visible. You cannot turn in completely. So few have preferred closed eyes. But closed eyes has one difficulty: the moment you close the eyes, you start dreaming. That is habitual. You have always dreamt with closed eyes. Have you ever dreamt with open eyes? The association between dreaming and closed eyes is so old, millions of years old, that the moment you close your eyes, soon dreams start, and meditation becomes impossible. Sleep prevents it, dreaming prevents it, thinking prevents it. All these have to disappear, only then the pure clarity of vision appears. Few have preferred open eyes, their idea is that once you understand clearly that all that you see is illusory, then there is no need to be afraid. Just see that it is just a drama, a screenplay, nothing to be worried about it, neither to be attached, no need to appreciate, no need to judgment. But it has its own difficulties. In the first place, you have to blink. You cannot keep your eyes continuously open. Blinking is absolutely necessary to keep the eyes clean. No dust should gather. That is the function of your eyelids. They are just like the wipers of a car. But idiots are idiots. There have been instances of self-torturing saints who have cut their eyelids. So there is no question of blinking. They sleep with open eyes, they dream with open eyes, they wake up with open eyes. There is no question, they have simply cut off their eyelids. But this is unnecessary and confusing, because they will not know when they are asleep and they will not know when they are awake. They will not know whether they are dreaming. Everything will become confused, just as small children always feel it. They cannot make distinction between waking and sleeping. In the sleep, the child was playing with a toy and suddenly he wakes up and finds the toy is gone. He looks all around and starts crying, "Where is the toy?" It takes some time to experience the distinction between sleep and waking. Because of these problems, few people like Dayakaku has preferred half-opened eyes. You are allowed to blink, but don't see far away. Just see 4 feet ahead of you. Exactly 4 feet. So your eyes remain to a very limited area. Nothing much is possible to happen in that small area. The sun will not rise. The full moon will not be seen. Even to see the faces of people is impossible unless they come too close. Only you can see the feet. This device was created to avoid the women. You should not see the face of the woman. Otherwise, attachment, love, liking, and all kinds of nightmares arise. Saints can be defend the people who have completely escaped from the fact that there are women also in the world. They are the perfect escapists. But it is not so easy to escape from anything. The more you escape from it, the more you dream of it. If there was possible to make a window in the head, you will be surprised that the ordinary people don't dream such ugly dreams. as your saints. Your saints can maintain the whole day, repress their natural desires, but when they are asleep, their control is no more there. Then you can see through their window. It will be a really great device to make windows. Anybody who wants to become a saint, it should be compulsory that a window has to be made, and you will find it more entertaining than any television. Everything will be topsy-turvy, but utterly interesting. But some method has to be applied. I don't agree with Dayakaku or Gautam Buddha on this point, that eyes should be half open. My understanding is that eyes should be left naturally as they are. Sometimes you feel to close them, then close. Sometimes you feel to open them to see the whole horizon, then open. And sometimes you feel just to remain half. Nobody is preventing. You are the master of your eyes. Why any discipline should be imposed on you? And meditation has nothing to do with your eyes, open, half, or closed. What Dayakaku thinks, that if you keep your eyes half open, watching over the tip of the nose, you would see all compounded things as like dreams. Nonsense. At least you will believe in your nose. You are so focused on the nose. Then Jews will be the great meditators. And what about people who have nothing much of a nose? Just flat ground. And it has nothing to do with that just by half-closed eyes, you should see all compounded things as like dreams, illusions, bubbles, shadows. That can be understood with open eyes. It is a question of understanding, not of the eyes. It can be understood with closed eyes. My own preference for meditators is to close eyes. Why all the traditions of the past have been against closed eyes? The reason is they have never allowed their saints full time to sleep. If a saint is allowed only 4 hours to sleep, naturally, whenever he will close his eyes, he will fall into a sleep. But a man like me, goes on sleeping, my eyes say, now it is time to open. I say, don't bother. You will find the same world there and the same nonsense going all around. Keep your eyes completely closed as long as you can. At least that much time you are out of the world. If I close my eyes, I don't fall asleep. I have slept in advance for many months. These people were worried that if you close your eyes, you will fall asleep. If you open your eyes, you may fall into some trap, into some illusion, into some woman to be. Frankly true. But my understanding is that the more you are acquainted with women and women are acquainted with you, the less is the interest. It is only acquaintance that can destroy the interest. The more distant you are kept, the more interesting men look to women, women look to men. The distance creates the illusion. In my university classes, girls had to sit on one side of the room, boys had to sit on another side of the room, and the professor was sitting in the middle, facing nobody. Because boys are on this side, girls are on this side. I immediately changed. The first day I entered the university, I told that immediately get mixed and be in front of me. They looked at each other, that what kind of man is this? Every teacher says, be separate, don't talk to girls. I said, just come in the middle. And rather than throwing small pebbles, if you want to give a good hit, why unnecessarily? You want to write and then throw those letters in the air, there is no need. You just take hold of the girl and get out. I am the last one to object. They could not believe me. They thought, I am a strange fellow. They reported to the Vice Chancellor that he is destroying the whole discipline. Although they loved the idea very much. The Vice Chancellor asked me that it is the discipline of the university. I said, I don't believe in this discipline. Who made this discipline? Is there any law? He said, there is no law, but putting girls and boys together, they will be more interested into each other than listening to you. I said, you are wrong. Keeping them separate, they are thinking of each other rather than listening to me. And I put them too much together, that there is no need to think about the girl. See the smelling of her perspiration. You are stinking. You have not taken the bath for a few days. And every day, how long you can remain interested? And I have given them every opportunity. If you want to go out, you go out. Don't ask my permission. And whenever you want to come in, just come silently. Don't ask my permission. I am here to teach. I am not here to make you saints or sinners. Become whatever you want. The best way is to taste both, sometimes saint, sometimes sinner. Why not have the whole wavelength available to you? So once in a while, be a saint, fast, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. Sit in a cross-legged lotus posture. And sometimes, just be a playboy. Having the experience of both, you will transcend both. And transcendence is the real thing. The Vice Chancellor hit his head. He said, transcendence? I have never heard that the university has any course for transcendence. I said, it may have, it may not have. But I am going to make my students transcend all dualities of man and woman. And you can see, here you are listening to me. Nobody is interested who is sitting by the side, whether she is a woman or a man. Maybe a woman with a beard. all kinds of people are here. Nobody is bothered. If you are here to listen something. But all these saints of the past were continuously worried about the outside world. Most emphatically, for man the woman, for woman the man. But these are not authentic problems for a meditator. The meditator has to close his eyes and watch his thoughts, not even making a judgment that they are bubbles, that they are shadows, that they are illusions, that they are dreams. The moment you make such judgments, dreams, shadows, bubbles, illusions, you are saying that you don't understand. If it is just an illusion, there is no need to say anything. The illusion will disappear. If it is a bubble, how long it can remain? Soon it will pop off. If it is not a real woman, but just imagination, how long it will remain there? Soon, the cloud will go away from the moon without scratching the moon. Anything that is illusory, you need not be worried about it. But all these saints were continuously worried about bubbles and shadows and illusions and dreams. My understanding and experience of meditation is that let it be whatever it is, you just remain silent without any concern, without any judgment, without making any appreciation or condemnation. Soon all the dust will settle and you will be left behind in your immense glory, in your tremendous beauty, in your peaks of consciousness. Dayakaku is talking about old pattern, old fashioned meditation. I don't agree with that. It is out of fear. When the eyes are open and you can see for a distance, your mind can be distracted by the profusion of objects. I don't see because I have been seeing all around. The mind is not distracted. The mind is distracted because you don't know anything about meditation. Once you know about meditation, your mind becomes a mirror. It reflects, but it is not distracted. Yet, if you close your eyes you fall into a state of darkness and oblivion, and your mind is not clear. So what is wrong in it? Falling into darkness, it is a very beautiful, velvety darkness. Falling into oblivion, it is a great experience. When your eyes are half open, your thoughts don't race, mind and body are thusness. When you examine clearly, the afflictions of birth and death cannot be approached. This is called fulfilling Buddhahood, right where you are, the meaning of great capacity and great function. What he is saying basically is right, but he is mixed up with the old traditional ways of meditation. Once in a while, those old methods work in a certain situation, but I want a more scientific method that always works. It is not a question of any accident. By accident I mean your wife dies. A man's father died. All elders of the neighborhood came, don't be worried. We are here. If you need any advice or anything, think of us as your father. Don't be worried. Don't weep. Then his mother died. And the same happened again. All the women came and they told that don't weep, don't cry. We are your mothers. You can always depend on us. And then his wife died. And nobody came. And he was sitting in front of his house, crying and weeping. Somebody asked, "What is the matter?" He said, "My matter is that now nobody is coming and telling me, don't cry. If your wife has died, we are here. And for this moment I have been waiting." The father died, I did not care. Mother died, I did not care. Now my wife died. And not a single woman has the humanity and compassion to come and say to me that don't be worried, I am here. I will be your wife. The man asked him, "So what you are going to do?" He said, "I am going to become a sannyasi. This is all useless. This whole world is illusory. Just talk, no reality." Many people become sannyasins because they have nothing else to do. No employment, no qualification. Because I have come across many sannyasins who wanted to drop their monkhood, but they were afraid that if we drop our monkhood, what will happen about our food, clothes, shelter? Because these same people who come to touch our feet will not give us employment. They will ask certificates. They will ask qualifications. In sannyas, nobody asks any qualification. No certificate is needed. In the past, most of the sannyasins of all religions were just hobos. Out of finding no place and achievement in life, they found it the easiest way to be respectable. I want to change the whole definition of sannyas. I want my sannyasins to be in the world, but not of the world. I want my sannyasins to be in the world, but don't let the world in you. It is very simple. Just a right meditation and a right grounding in yourself, and the world cannot disturb you. Nobody has time to disturb you. Everybody is so much engaged in his own affairs and worries and sufferings. And if you can be silent in the world, then your silence has some value, some authenticity. In the Himalayas, the silence is not yours. It belongs to the Himalayas. The moment you will come into the world, it will be disturbed. Thirty years a man remained in the Himalayas meditating. And he started thinking that he has become a Buddha. And then there was a great fair, Kumbh Mela, in Allahabad, which is perhaps the greatest gathering on the earth. Of Hindus, so some people asked the great saint that now you have been 30 years in the Himalayan caves, it is time you should come down. And this is the most appropriate time. Millions of people will be in the Kumbh Mela, they will rejoice seeing your peace and your silence. He loved the idea. He came down, but in the crowd nobody knew him. Just as he entered the crowd, one man put his shoe on his feet. He immediately jumped and took hold of the man's neck and said, "I will kill you." And then he remembered, "My God, what happened to 30 years of Himalaya? What was that silence? He has not done much, just he has stepped over my feet. And he has taken away 30 years of Buddhahood." A real silence, a real Buddhahood has to be discovered in the world, here and now. Otherwise, it can be phony. Most probably it will be phony. It won't have the fire test. The world is a fire test. If you can become silent here, and I don't see there is any hindrance. We become silent here every day, and slowly, slowly the silence will flow into your being, into your daily activities. Your Buddhahood should not be an extraordinary, any special thing, but just a pure innocence, reflecting the beauty of this whole universe. A haiku by Isa: from the white dewdrop learn the way to the pure land. From the white dewdrops, learn the way. What he is saying, have you seen the dewdrops on the lotus leaves? The lotus is the biggest flower in the world, and it has very big leaves floating on the water. In the night, dewdrops gather on the leaves, and in the morning, they slowly, slowly drift towards the lake. And their silent merger into the lake without making any fuss. Isa is saying, from the white dewdrops, learn the way to the pure land. By pure land he means the Buddha land, the Buddha consciousness. And Masusi, another master, under the soul lifted high, there is hell making you tremble, but go ahead and you have the land of bliss. There is a danger on the border line from mind to no mind. There is a danger from going in an unknown territory, but where you are just in a hell. You don't recognize the hell because you are born in hell. Everybody else is in hell. And naturally one takes that this is what life is meant to be. But just to go a little deeper and you will land into a totally different space which will give you for the first time the joy, the bliss, the ecstasy and the comparison what you had been doing up to now outside and what was hidden inside you. You were searching stones and inside there are diamonds. You were fighting for stones and you were carrying a mine of diamonds. Manisha has asked, what place does a structured meditation technique have in the lives of your sannyasins, both when we are living near you and when we are away? Is it sufficient to sit in meditation in your presence or listen to a video and then to carry that meditativeness into the rest of the day, or should additional time be set aside to do zazen or vipassana? Manisha, it is up to everyone's convenience. If you feel that it is not enough meditation to be meditative in all your activities, then it is perfectly good to have some small time just for meditation. But if you feel that when you are sitting just for meditation, you have the same joy, the same silence as when you are doing your work meditatively, then there is no need. Finally, there should be no need. For the beginners, I am saying, at your convenience. But finally your whole life should be nothing but a meditation. Whatever you do should be a meditation. And there should be no separate, particularly structured timetable. That is for the beginners. And I don't think you are beginners. Now it is time enough not to be beginners. Before we enter into the meditation, a little clearance, a little lightness, a little of Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Giovanni comes home early one day and finds his wife Sophia in bed with Luigi, the carpenter. Sophia screams, Luigi screams. Then Giovanni runs to the closet, pulls out his pistol and faces his wife. Then he puts the barrel out of the gun to his forehead. Ah no, poor Giovanni, cries Sophia, don't do that. Giovanni smirks at her and says, don't feel sorry for me, you stranger. You are gonna to be the next. Kowalski and Zebrowski are having a few beers at the Crunchy Crumpet pub. Jesus Christ, says Kowalski, the judge really nailed me in court today. What happened? Asks Zebrowski. Well, says Kowalski, first he fined me $500 for attempting to make love to some woman on the bus. And then when he took a good look at her, he fined me an extra $10 for being drunk. Big black Leroy strides into the Hoo-Flung-Dung bar and noodle house in Chinatown. Hey Chink, shouts Leroy to five dragons who behind the bar. Give me a drink. Wu frowns, but serves Leroy a drink. 5 minutes later, Leroy is thirsty again. Hey, Chink, he shouts, give me a drink. Five dragons, Wu, scrawls, but serves the drink. Leroy knocks back the drink and shouts again, hey Ching, how about a drink? Listen, Buster, says Wu, finally I keep my temper. You come behind the bar and see how you like to be insulted. Leroy and five dragons Wu change places. Okay, ask Wu. Now you nigger, give me a jigger. Sorry, replies Leroy, we don't serve chinks. close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Gather all your life force and go deeper in yourself, making your life energy just like an arrow, deeper and deeper. The deeper you go, the closer you are to your Buddhahood. At the deepest, you are no more, just the Buddha is. This is the ultimate experience of a meditator. In this moment, the dewdrop slips into the ocean and becomes the ocean. In this moment is the whole eternity. Life and death are just games. Waves in the eternal consciousness that you are. It is not yours individually. It is the vast ocean in which everybody is part. This life energy expresses itself in millions of ways, in the roses, in the birds, in the trees, in the oceans. It is the same life energy in different form. Once you see the point, all life becomes sacred, divine. There is no other God than this existence itself. To make it clear, Nivedana, relax. The body is there, the mind is there. You are a watcher. This watching is the most miraculous thing. This watching takes you to the transcendental. To the beyond, to skies beyond skies, to infinity. The joy of it, the blissfulness of it, is inexpressible. But it brings a dance to you, and slowly, slowly the dance deepens into every fiber of your being, into your 24-hour activities. Something inside goes on dancing, singing, rejoicing. For no reason at all, just to be in such a beautiful existence is enough to be grateful. I know no other prayer than gratefulness, a deep gratitude to existence. Nivedana come back, but bring with you the experience, the space, the taste of silence. Sit down for a few moments as Buddhas, remembering and reminding that this is what you have to carry along your life. That this experience of being a Buddha has to become your heartbeat, your breathing, your joy, your love. Can we celebrate the gathering of the Buddhas?
Yes.